Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Up, welcome in. This is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day, thanks so much. I'm Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin Cowherd. Great third hour of the show for you. Rich Ornberger is going to join us, former offensive lineman and a good one. Also a host on Fox Sports Radio. We got news to update you on. And there's this. I realize that the MVP is not going to be Kawhi Leonard. Okay? I realize that. Not going to be Kawhi Leonard. Because in order to be the MVP, you got to play, you know, most of the games. You got to dominate most of the games. Stats, though, they don't matter. And honestly, the MVP discussion in the NBA, I feel like, is somewhat a creation of ESPN. I just do. Not that we didn't discuss it before, but the whole season long, who's the MVP, you know? That's because they, in their new TV package, they have so many NBA games that you got to give me some reason to watch. MVP candidate, James Harden, teaming up with former MVP, James Harden, with MVP, Russell Westbrook, going up against MVP, right? Like, it's like, yay. I get it. You want me to watch. Sunday. So Giannis is probably the MVP. I would have given it to LeBron James. I think that's a very responsible way of looking at it, because if you're LeBron, you sit there and go, hey, man, I turned around this entire franchise. Our team became great defensively. My stats are great, but more than anything, we have more wins than anybody in the West. And by the end of the season, before it was postponed, they were beating the Clippers and the Bucks in the same week. Those are the two MVP candidates, but the guy who's the best player in the league is Kawhi Leonard. He plays both ends. LeBron can't play as well defensively as he used to. He's not able to get where he wants to get as often or as easily. It's a little bit harder for him. It just is. Look, man, when you're 35 years old and you're going up against dudes that are in their 20s, it's going to be a little bit harder for you. He's still a monster, still a tremendous player. I thought he was dethroned as the best player in the league by Kevin Durant during the two previous NBA finals when they went against each other. Kawhi Leonard was the best player in the finals. I don't know. We didn't see Kevin Durant against him enough to really determine. And Kawhi's been a two-time finals MVP, but I watched Kawhi play yesterday. I'm like, man, that's the best player on earth right now. Both ends, post, can handle, can pass, can rebound, can shoot. He's the best player. But what if that's a bad thing? What if it's a bad thing? Like, the NBA is about personalities, the personalities of superstars. And Kawhi Leonard, I'm sure, in the bubble, deep in the bubble, maybe he has a huge personality. And I don't mind that he's not one of these guys that had anything put on the back of his jerseys. He's not about social justice in terms of outwardly being grabbed the microphone and protest things, even though I'm sure as a black man, these things are near and dear to his heart. Just doesn't have to be flamboyant with it. That's not his style. But it's hard to be the face of the league if that's not your style, if you're not an out-in-front guy. Just isn't. Like, he's tremendous. He does, and I don't think there's anything wrong with New Balance's campaign for him, but it's still New Balance. It's hard to be cool and wear New Balance. Promote New Balance. It doesn't affect your game. You can still be the best player. But I want you to think about these factors working against the NBA. Okay. In a week and a half, you're no longer the biggest show on earth. Right? Right now, baseball has clearly taken a backseat to basketball. And I'm a hoop head. I watch all these games. I have the games going on. They start playing. I'm watching them all day. It's amazing. But I'm also realistic that once Thursday night hits and it's Chiefs and Texans, if you're leading and talking about basketball instead of football, you're digging your own grave as a sports host. It's just not as important. Even if they're playing for a championship. I know it's counterintuitive, but they're getting ready to go up against football. That's not going to end well. I don't think that all of their emotions are in check, and many of it through no fault of their own. Like, look, dude, if you're at a hotel for 2 months straight, you're going to go a little cuckoo for your Cocoa Puffs too. No matter how nice the hotel is. And you can sit here and tell people, hey, you know, you were at home for 3 months. What's the big deal being gone for 2 or 3 months? Yeah, well, when that's not what you're used to, granted, first world problems, beautiful resort, everything taken care of, it still can lead to your mental. So you're not necessarily acting and behaving with the same type of joy and fun. We talked about this earlier in the show. Jamal Murray has 50 last night. He didn't really crack a smile. I understand when you watch the video of Kenosha, Wisconsin, you're like, that was disturbing. That is heart-wrenching. And you start to learn some of the different details to it, and you have your own questions. Like, and you can be passionate about social justice and police reform and the election, all these things. But sports was designed to kind of take us away emotionally, emotionally. And if you want to know that, yes, it's lacking a crowd. But the big thing that the bubble seems to be lacking is fun. Fun. So the NBA has become a little less fun of a league, a little too serious. We're taking on, and they're taking on serious topics. Does time demand that they have to? I guess. But once you start playing, it can just be about playing. And about enjoying yourself, about competing. Because Jamal Murray at the end of the game actually kind of tried to let us in. Like, hey, I just play to win. But then he got into the mode of social justice warrior, and it became about more than basketball, which is a cool saying and is a fact. It's going to be fascinating to see how much it changes at all, if anything, in society. But, dude, not one mention of, like, that was awesome. That was so much fun. Every time. It was basically like NBA. You know, NBA, ever played NBA Jam? You know when the guy gets on fire? He's on fire. And no matter what shot you throw up, it goes in. That was Jamal Murray last night. So you have Kawhi Leonard as your best player. He's boring as sin. You have dudes having historic nights, and they won't crack a smile because they're so serious with all the things happening in the world. And because of their stances, there's a certain divisiveness in the us and them kind of camp. And look, I'm not going to sit here and say I in any way agree with the mistreatment of any American citizen or really any human being. But I also will tell you, like, there's big discussions to have about politics, and at most every opinion that doesn't violate somebody else's rights should be welcome. That's the way this thing works. But when you bring politics into sports, it can turn off a lot of people. And I want you to look back. When Jordan left the league, really for good, I know he came back with the Wizards. You know, whether it was the gear guys were wearing or the approach guys had, but the reason David Stern put in the dress code was that was it wasn't as relatable to the average fan as it needed to be. The NBA was the most popular sport in America, and then it got passed by baseball and football. And of course, now I believe it's more popular than the baseball. But what led to it? You had a superstar who was boring in Tim Duncan and a team that didn't want to, was in a city that wasn't a popular city, and a franchise that didn't want to play ball in terms of enjoying the limelight at all. Kobe went through kind of his I want to be a hip hop star sort of, he started to take over the league a little bit as well. you had a little bit of divisiveness just in the desire to be almost progressive in terms of music and dress and whatever. This is coming off of Jordan, who's wearing a suit and tie everywhere he goes. I'm not telling you it turns me off. I don't care. I like to watch basketball, and those guys are great. You know, like, I watch them play, and they're so much better than I could ever hope to have been. Right? Like, I'm sitting there next to my son watching NBA players, and my dad's like, my son's sitting there going like, man, you almost played in the NBA. And I think to myself, like, I think I was a little bit further off than I thought, than I previously thought I was, because these guys are amazing. Amazing. But that, I'm not the average fan. I'm not the average consumer. We seem to be walking down the same path of what happened previously. And in a week and a half, I think there's a chance for a reckoning. NFL football starts versus NBA basketball. If you have one TV, you're going to watch Chiefs and Texans, even though it's only week one and there'll be 20,000 fans in the stands? Or are you going to watch Rockets-Lakers game four? Ask yourself. Kind of interesting, right? That's what we do. So, look, I love Kawhi. I thought he proved to be the I thought he proved to be the best player in the NBA yesterday. He continues to rise his level in elimination games. Just, I'm going to win this game. And I don't mind that he's not flamboyant, but I don't know if you get the same buy-in from the American sports fan considering all the factors at play. All right, coming up next, former offensive lineman Rich Ohrenberg joins the show. Where will Leonard Fournette end up? And can culture actually win games in the NFL, or is it you got to have players? Because it feels like several NFL teams are going, hey, culture above talent, character above talent. We'll get that next in The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I'm going to give something away here that we don't normally give it away. For our best for last, and I'll explain why I came up for this best for last, I want to do the 10 best movies without happy endings. Make sense? 10 best movies without happy endings. So feel free to submit those at Gottlieb Show on both IG and on Twitter, at Gottlieb Show. The list is good. The list is strong. Order is always a very difficult one. There is a clear number one, right? This is like the final college football poll. Now there's a clear number one. We know who the number one is. Goulet, do you know who the number one is? Movie without a happy ending. It's one of the great movies of all time. Doesn't have a happy ending. No. Okay. Why don't you think about it? All right. Rich Ohrenberger joins us. Of course, you can hear him on Fox Sports Radio on the weekends. He's a former offensive lineman. He's an NFL analyst and a good one. He joins us here in The Herd. Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin. What's your reaction to Leonard Fournette getting cut?
My reaction is the Jaguars are in full-on tank mode, and regardless of whether or not they're going to admit it, they are. Leonard Fournette is coming off arguably his best season as a football player because he's playing at the highest level, and he averaged over 4 yards per rush. He had the most yards from scrimmage last year. As a career running back in the NFL, he averages exactly 4 yards per carry on average. So this is not surprising considering Gardner Minshew is your starting quarterback and Mike Glennon is his backup. But it is an absolute confirmation that they are clearing house and they are looking forward to 2021, 2022, 2023, whenever this young team can get back on the path to winning again.
I guess my question would be, if Leonard Fournette, and he, everything you said is accurate in terms of having a great year. He actually had 76 catches, that's the mind-blowing thing, because the knock on Leonard Fournette is he's a good running back, but that's all he does is get the ball and run the football. He actually caught it out of the backfield relatively well last year. But why wouldn't anybody trade for him if he's so good?
Well, running backs, especially this time of year, unless we're talking about a Saquon Barkley, if he were – you know, completely displeased with the Giants and looking to force a trade. You know, this is a tough time of year. Unless there are a rash of injuries at the position, you're not going to get great value, because in the NFL, and this has been true for a while now, it's not the most important position. It really comes in somewhere closer to the 10th most important position on the field these days. I mean, you need to have a great quarterback. You need a great left tackle. You need a great pass rusher. You need a great receiver. You need a great cornerback. And the list goes on for a few more positions, and then you start talking about running back. So already it's a position in the NFL that has been devalued. I'm not going to argue against the value of a great running back. Look at Derrick Henry, who absurdly carried the Tennessee Titans offense into the postseason. They beat the Patriots in the first round. So there are great running backs who you can sort of rest the franchise on their shoulders still in the league, but the value of the position has decreased, and this isn't a great time of year to be shopping trades.
Rich Hornberg joining us in the herd. I'm Doug Gottlieb, former offensive lineman, Fox Sports Radio host, and an NFL analyst, and a really, really good one. Have you ever heard of what Yannick Ngakoue did? He's got 1 year left on his deal. He took $6 million less to get out of Jacksonville. Like, I don't remember hearing that. It's actually, the last time I remember it being proposed was actually Kaepernick, his last year in San Francisco. He was set to make 14, and the Broncos said, like, hey, we'll take you, but we want you to only make 7. He balked at it. That was the end of that as a possibility. But I can't remember a player in at Ngakoue's position as a defensive end taking this much less money.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of, based on the move, is he wants to go join a team in an organization with a brighter future and an opportunity to really and truly prove himself. It's sort of like, you know, short-term investment. You know, this is a career. It isn't just a collection of snapshots. So I'm assuming, you know, going to the Vikings, where clearly they're trying to build a winner, felt like a better option. And also, let's think about where this defense for Jacksonville is. 2017, in the Super Bowl, an AFC Championship team game. You know, we look at the Jaguars now, and it's a mess. You know, they've traded away some key pieces. Jalen Ramsey, it's been a long time since he's been a part of Duval Nation, and that was really the first of many chips to fall following him. And so Ngakoue, I just think, really wanted out, and he's taken a short-term loss to potentially prove himself to the team who's aiming to be a winner. And, you know, that next contract will be a big one if he can do that.
We are a week and a half away from NFL games being played, right? That it's with no preseason, limited scrimmages. What are your expectations? Like, you know, Kansas City, they did lose two starters who opted out. Damian Williams is their best player for most of the Super Bowl. I know Pat Mahomes obviously won the MVP. You lose a starting offensive lineman. Like, what can we expect from these teams where they haven't actually had a preseason game for the first time ever in recent memory?
Well, the interesting thing is, I've always said this. The preseason isn't essential because everybody's starting from the same platitude. If we were talking about how, you know, there was a preseason and due to COVID-19, you know, team-wide outbreaks or something like that, half the league couldn't participate or couldn't completely fulfill their preseason games, you know, then it would mean that half the league has a leg up on the other half. But in this situation, since the preseason was completely, you know, banned, you know, due to the concerns over COVID-19, we have everybody starting from the same platitude. It's going to look potentially a little rustier than years past, but these are paid professionals and they've been practicing within the facilities for a month at this point. So I look at it as we probably won't be able to see the difference from years past. The only place where you may see a slight difference is younger players trying to get early action in the league, rookies, second-year players, where the preseason can dramatically advance their opportunities depending on play. We may see less of that. We may see a heavier reliance on veteran players during the early days of the season. But outside of that, I think I think we're going to see an evenness across the NFL, very similar to if all 32 teams played out a full preseason, because none of the 32 teams had a preseason.
Rich Schoenberger, our guest in the Herd. I'm Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin. It appears that Cam Newton, shocker, has separated himself in New England. But there's a team that lost more starters than anybody to COVID in terms of opting out. And they already were depleted in regards to, you know, why did Tom Brady leave? Well, there's other reasons, but one of them was, like, put some dudes around him, right? What can we expect from Cam Newton considering the limitations of his supporting cast, the lack of time with his team, and the fact that he hadn't played in, you know, he only played the first couple games of last season?
Well, what we can expect is his personal best effort. If he's healthy, which from all reports it appears he is, this is going to be as much as we could possibly see out of Cam Newton. He comes into the season with a chip on his shoulder. You know, obviously he spent about 100 days on the free agency market, and the Patriots have a habit of refitting even veteran and older veteran players with some star potential back into the conversation of one of the greats in the NFL. And I think Cam Newton could be the next one. I don't disagree with you. They're depleted in a lot of places across the offense. But Cam is a special player when healthy. Cam can create like very few other players in this league when healthy. You know, he brings a dimension to this offense, which was truly one-dimensional last year. I mean, and that you could blame that on Tom Brady's, you know, lack of ability to evade the rush. You could blame it on the offensive line who struggled last year. You could blame that on the injuries. You could blame it on the lack of ability to surround Brady with talent. But it truly was one-dimensional offense. So if Cam's healthy, we can expect a lot more creativity from the Patriots offensively. So I don't know what to expect, because I'm not sold. I'm not 100% certain that he can be the Cam of yore. But if he is, get ready for fireworks, because I know Josh McDaniels is going to be excited to work with a dynamic quarterback. I know that this offense, including Edelman and Sanu and some of these other pieces that have been in place for a while, could thrive in a situation where there's a little bit more improvisation as opposed to straight line, snap, handoff, snap, pass.
I and everybody wants a mobile quarterback. My question becomes, how mobile is Cam at this point in his career through that number of injuries? And maybe how mobile is he after somebody hits him a couple of times, because he's taken a savage beating because of how he's played football to this point. Derwin James out for a significant amount of time. I do understand that many who watch football, love football, they know who Derwin James is. They've heard the name. They know how good he is, but it doesn't really have an effect on things to them because doesn't play a part in fantasy football and frankly plays for the Chargers. But to someone like you who truly knows this game, how big a loss is that for the Chargers?
Immeasurable. Immeasurable. It's a big reason why the Chargers really fell off a cliff in 2019. Derwin James is such an unbelievably special player. Look, the NFL is really tough. The NFL is a really, really hard place to be successful, and very few rookies find immediate success. Derwin James, out of the box from Florida State, was a difference maker on defense. He helped carry a team through 12 regular season wins. He helped earn the Chargers in his rookie season a playoff victory against Baltimore. I mean, this is one of those players who could truly be transcendent just on the very limited vista we've had into his potential at the NFL level. But that's a problem, because your durability is your most important ability. If you can't stay healthy, it doesn't matter if you're the fastest guy. We'll never know it, because if you spend more time on the carpet than the grass, we don't get to see what you could potentially do at this level. So it is a frustration that Derwin James, again, reports out that it's a meniscus injury and he'll miss significant time this year. It was a refracture of a foot injury he had from his college days last year, that his early career over these past two and some odd change seasons has been disrupted this way. But as soon as this guy's 100% healthy, he can play every position on the defense, excluding, you know, interior defensive line. He can be used as a pass rusher and a blitzer up near the line of scrimmage. He can be used as a slot corner. He can be used as he can match up against a number one receiver. He can play deep safety. He can play box linebacker. He's a utility knife that the Chargers were using perfectly before this rash of injuries, and they will use him again that way, assuming health.
Rich, great stuff, man. Thanks so much for joining us. Look, we're a week and a half away from football. Thanks for being our guest.
Yeah, you got it, Doug.
All right, pleasure is all mine. That's Rich Orenberger. Hear him on Fox Sports Radio on the weekends. Let's get to my man John Goulet with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
So as you mentioned with Rich, the Jaguars have traded, and this just became official, Yannick Ngakoue to the Vikings for a second-round pick and then a conditional fifth-round pick from 2022, which could work its way up to a third, depending on how good he does. In order to complete the trade, Ngakoue agreed to a one-year $12 million deal instead of his franchise tender. So basically, he gave up $6 million to leave Jacksonville, which is kind of crazy. We've talked enough about the Jags today, though, with two news with Fournette being released as well. Let's go to the other side. Does this change anything for you with the Vikings? Over under 9 wins this year. Expect to make the playoffs.
They lost their defensive backfield.
Yes.
So I guess the plan is like, hey, you got Danielle Hunter on one side and you got Ngakoue on the other.
Right.
You can hide it with a really good pass rush. They still have an issue with their running back wanting to get paid, who they don't want to pay.
And they lost Stephon Diggs.
And well, they lost Stephon Diggs.
Added Justin Jefferson,
but a rookie for a guy who's a vet is hard. And they lost Kevin Stefanski, who called plays. Now, the plays may have been boring, but it did work.
It did work.
It's like boring but good. It's like a Bobo. Anyway, there's a little bit of Jacksonville as well to the Vikings, and stick with me on this one, right?
Okay.
The downfall of the Jaguars can be correlated directly to when they gave a quarterback who no one believed in a contract extension.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
And you can say, well, we believed in it. No, you didn't. You had a lead and the football in New England right before the half. You had like 58 seconds to go, and you took a knee. It was like the Jimmy Garoppolo in the Super Bowl kind of thing, right? And, okay, you didn't win the game. But that's coming off his best game when he played against Pittsburgh. Best game of his life.
Yeah.
And you didn't give him a shot. Okay. Then you give him a contract extension in the offseason when you clearly didn't believe in him? That was the downfall. I bring that to Minnesota because I know that Kirk Cousins played well in their win against New Orleans on the road, their playoff win.
Yeah.
But everyone has their doubts over the ceiling of Kirk Cousins. And I know they had to move some money around because they're kind of in cap hell. But giving him a contract extension at about the same money feels a little bit like what Jacksonville did. So I'm cautious of the Vikings. I don't think they'll be as good. I just don't. You lose a coach. You lose defensive backfield. The Packers are still very good. I think the Bears will be a little bit better. And I think the Lions should be better.
Lions have been a lot of people's kind of upset pick.
I mean, like, look, if you have Matt Stafford the whole season, you're going to be better. And I think they've done a good job of turning over that roster some. So they could be the same and have a worse record, but I don't think they're the same. I think they're slightly worse.
During the Clippers game 6 win over the Mavs yesterday, Marcus Morris committed another attack on Luka, and a flagrant foul. It was a flagrant 2, so it got him ejected. He hit him in the face as he was driving to the lane.
In the face!
Doc Rivers said Morris was going for the ball and said, quote, "I think he got ejected because he's Marcus, to be honest." Doc Rivers just blatantly lying to all of us. Listen, Morris has been doing this, right? He's going after Luka because he's young, fragile, or in theory fragile, and the Mavs' best player.
Right.
Is this going to continue throughout the playoffs where Marcus Morris is going to, like, this is an intimidation factor?
This is my role?
Yeah. I mean, Pat Beverly probably does a little bit of this when he's back.
Yes.
But, I mean, I would say when they're going to face either the Jazz or the Nuggets,
well,
who also have young stars.
Right. I mean, this is why you need one crazy person.
Yeah.
Right? Because the way it's supposed to work is you foul my star, that's fine. Next time your guy drives in, boom, down he goes. And so I think that's probably the next step. I mean, part of it is the flaw in the construction of the Dallas Mavericks is they have no tough guys.
No.
Who's the tough guy? They got all great, great dudes. They have no tough guys. Nobody who's willing to knock somebody on their ass. Which is what should have happened. You foul Luka, fine. We're going to put you on the deck next time you drive, or your star player on the deck next time you drive.
And finally, on Saturday, the Blazers' bubble run came to an end. They lost to the Lakers in Game 5. Skinny Melo became one of the storylines of the bubble, showed up in great shape, averaged 15 a game in the series with the Lakers, and sounds like he wants to stay in Portland.
Honestly, think that I found a home in Portland. You know, I got comfortable with the organization. I got comfortable with the guys on the team. They got comfortable with me. And at this point in my career, I do think that that's the best fit for me, the best situation, especially having this experience now.
A lot of people seem to like him, think that he did a really good job. Doug, you are not a huge Melo fan.
No, I'm not a fan, but
you are not as impressed with how he played as some others.
I just, like, there's a lot more to it than just, like, did the ball go in the basket or not go in the basket?
Yeah.
Right? Because he's not an efficient player. You know, he had his first three games, really three and a half games, he was terribly inefficient. And if he doesn't give you great efficiency on offense, he gives you very little on defense. And, you know, a lot of it's about roles. You know, in that role, there's a reason Portland was so bad defensively. It's not just Damian Lillard's not good defensively. CJ McCollum's okay. Like, they're just, and then Melo can't really guard anybody. That's why he struggles. Do I think Melo in his prime was I thought he was the best scorer in the league
for
about 5 years there. Because he could score to three, not as well as he's shooting now. Great mid-range and unbelievable post-up player. He was tremendous. When you're that guy, you can play, they can hide you a little bit defensively. When you're the third or fourth option, can't hide you defensively. You can't. And especially when you're playing against starters. And he got absolutely exposed. So I don't fall in love with the stat column for what he shot and how many points he got. In totality, Portland went from a Western Conference Finals team to one that lost in the first round. And having Melo play that many minutes is at least a portion of the reason why.
He mentioned fitting in. He does. He fits what the rest of the Blazers do, is they're good on offense and not good on defense. Yeah. The problem is they kind of need the opposite of that to fill his role, not
right.
another
they need,
one.
Well, they didn't have Trevor Ariza either, remember,
sure.
because he opted out. I mean, really, they need a Trevor Ariza, but they need a Trevor Ariza from like 5 years ago because he's too long in the tooth. But yes, you're right. They need defense, and somebody does need the ball. And that's John Goulet with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
I am super encouraged by your help at Gottlieb Show, our best for last. I'll tell you why and what our top 10 list of movies without a happy ending are. That's next in The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb in for calling. This is The Herd. Heard from a lot of you on social media that you agree with me on this major point, this important, important point. And I cannot iterate and reiterate it. And it's one of the things that parents have implored upon me in terms of coaching youth sports, which is, and I get away with it from it sometimes, which is sports is supposed to be fun. And I got to tell you, I love the NBA. I think the guys are amazing. I think, you know, the old narrative of dumb jocks is a dumb narrative. Some of the brightest people I've met are athletes, present company excluded. So this isn't an attack on anybody's intelligence or wherewithal. You know, I've heard people question whether or not you get into a political discussion when you're not a politician. Like, no, politics should be for everybody to discuss. But I think if you're trying to sell me that basketball games are part of a big political statement, like, it just makes it so it's not fun. I'm sorry. Sports is supposed to be fun. I'm actually not sorry. Sports is supposed to be fun. I respect the fact that you want to stand up for people less, if you feel like you're standing up for people less fortunate than you. I respect that. And these things matter to you. I respect that. But do you remember when basketball was fun? I saw Jamal Murray have 50 last night and save his team from elimination. Couldn't get him to crack a smile. Couldn't get him to crack. He was just talking about how tired he is of this fight. Like, dude, you're 23. You know? Enjoy the moment. There is
lots of time in the day, lots of time in your life to make social change. I'm not saying it shouldn't be important, but you should also have fun with the fact that you just lit up the Utah Jazz and saved the Nuggets from elimination. Let's get to the best for last.
It's almost the end of the show, but that doesn't mean we're phoning it in. Nope, we grind to the very last segment. It's time for Best for Last.
Okay, there is no historic meaning to the reason for this poll, except for this. So I have a daughter, her name is Harper. She's 14, okay? And in my effort to relate to my daughter for as long as possible, we watch movies together. It's been our thing through quarantine. And we watch movies together. And she watched Shawshank Redemption. Great movie, right? She did watch Silence of the Lambs. Scary, great movie, right? And plenty of others. So we hadn't watched a movie in a while, and I thought, what about Million Dollar Baby? I mean, how do you beat Million Dollar? You know, produced, directed by Clint Eastwood, Morgan Freeman, again, the Shawshank Redemption connection in it, and then Hilary Swank is the fighter in Million Dollar Baby. I don't want to give away the ending, but I remember we're coming up on the ending, and she's a movie talker. She talks a lot, which is good. That's why we vibe. Is she'll ask questions in the movie, and sometimes I'll stop and like kind of explain it. She's like, "Wait, is she gonna walk again?" Like, no. she broke her C1 and C2. She can't breathe on her own. Is she gonna walk again? Well, that's not how a movie is supposed to end. So I thought of the 10 best movies, just personal 10 best movies without a happy ending.
Number 10.
Titanic. Guess what? Ship still sinks, right? You know, people still die, ship still sinks. But great movie. Anybody argue? Like, a little bit of a chick flick, but still a great movie.
Number 9.
No Country for Old Men. There's a lot I would like explained to the end of this movie, right? Like, I think I know what happens.
Maybe it had a happy ending and we just don't really know.
Right? It's very confusing. And I'm like, did they forget to put the ending part on there? Nope, that's how they wanted it.
Number 8.
The Departed. This is one of those movies, it's not like Legends of the Fall. Remember Legends of the Fall, Brad Pitt and that one? Everybody dies. That's basically The Departed. Everybody. Just like, oh, maybe he... Nope. He's going to die too. Nope. He's going to die too. Bad wins. Good doesn't. Everybody dies. Still a great movie, The Departed.
Number 7.
Green Mile. You know, I need to go back and watch The Green Mile. I do remember vaguely how it ended. And I remember Tom Hanks. And I remember... He actually died. The super gunned up dude. No, I can see it in the movie, but he actually died in real life, too. Michael Clark Duncan, right? Michael Clark Duncan. He's a bigger-than-life human being, right?
Number 6.
Braveheart. That is the ultimate in unhappy endings. What they did to Mel Gibson's character. William Wallace! Oh, yeah, that's how it ended.
Number 5.
Friday Night Lights. Okay, so Friday Night Lights, the movie, which is also a book, and it's a true story. Right? It's not Varsity Blues. You ruined my season, Billy Bob, right? No, don't get them confused. I'm not talking about the TV show Friday Night Lights. Has there anything that's gotten, like, book, TV show, and movie? That's a lot.
Number 4.
Avengers Infinity War. Very important. Arguably the best of the Marvel movies. I would put Deadpool first. I know that I'm personally... what was the one that I... Why am I forgetting? What was the one that I told you guys I thought my favorite is... I'm a Guardians of the Galaxy. I like Guardians of the Galaxy. I like Deadpool. I like the sense of humor. Black Panther was on like every station last night because of the untimely death of the star. Infinity War, if you remember, wait, can I give it away? It's not that old a movie.
We're talking about movie endings. Spoiler alert is kind of implied.
Right. But with one glove gripping itself,
half of the universe's population vanishes, including Black Panther. Don't worry. The next Avengers, he's okay. Came back.
Number three.
Seven. Okay, this might be the worst ending of all of them, right? Right? The woman you love, head in a box. Brad Pitt opens it up, like not even... Yeah, that is not the surprise ending that I thought would happen at the end of Seven. But it makes for a great movie.
Number two.
Million Dollar Baby. If you've forgotten, she's in a championship fight. Dirty fighter punches her when she turns her back. And substitute stool guy, you know, corner man for Morgan Freeman's character, leaves the stool out there instead of Clint Eastwood, who usually holds the stool himself. She hits her head, breaks her neck. And then Clint Eastwood, only after going to church and asking the priest about it, decides to fulfill her wishes and help her commit suicide. Yeah, that's not the ending you thought was coming.
Number one.
Empire Strikes Back. Like, it's like the original, old school, hey, I didn't know evil could actually win at the end of a movie. Granted, they wrapped it all in a bow in Return of the Jedi, but maybe the most iconic and, by my estimation, best not-so-happy Disney-type ending, Empire Strikes Back. So that's our best for last. That's
honorable mention, someone tweeted this in too late. American History X.
American History X, also very good. There was some that were like... Twisted endings, right? That we usual suspects for a second. Kaiser Soze. Guys, that's a twist. It's not a happy ending, but he does get away, right? Does get away, so it's kind of a happy ending. He's the bad guy, but he gets away. Is a twisted ending is different. All right, the NBA playoffs continue. We continue to get closer and closer and closer to an NFL season. But tonight in the NBA, you got Miami-Milwaukee Game 1, followed by Oklahoma City and Houston. Houston looked just dominant last time out in comparison to Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City, a team that can't really shoot, but when they hit shots, they're very athletic defensively, very young. Houston is a five-point favorite. I would like the Rockets to win and the Rockets to cover. Milwaukee's a five-and-a-half-point favorite. I like Miami to cover and Milwaukee to win. I think those will be two. I think one will be a close game. I think Houston puts away Oklahoma City, and that season comes to an end. You have the death of John Thompson, also Lute Olson, legendary Arizona coach who passed away. So you're having kind of a generation of college basketball coaches. Eddie Sutton, my head coach, died as well this year. So really, 2020 generally sucks. Anyway, we'll be back tomorrow. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is The Herd.